Well, this morning we're going to look at a parable. And like I put in the bulletin, parables are kind of fun. It's a genre that I think works well for teaching the big ideas and making them more simple. It's a good way of doing storytelling. I think there's a reason that Jesus used parables so often. Before we get into the parable of the rich man and Lazarus from Luke 16, I'd like to tell another story. We have story time. We have kids' songs. We'll do story time. We might have snack and a craft later. Maybe not. But this is a story. Maybe you know this story. And if you do, it's okay. Just bear with me. You don't have to stop. It's a story of there was a young boy who was taking care of sheep. And he was very bored one day. And he decided to have some mischievous fun. And he started calling out that there was a wolf. He's yelling, "Wolf, wolf, come help!" And men from the community come running with their torches and pitchforks or something different. They come running out with whatever they need to attack a wolf. And they find out that there was no wolf. And the boy starts laughing. He thinks it's hilarious how he's gotten everybody to come running. And they grumble and leave. The next day, it's boring again. I guess sheep are like that. And he said, "Boy, that was fun yesterday. I'm going to try doing that again." So he calls out, "Wolf, wolf." And again, they come running. And they're ready to take care of the wolf, save this child. And they again see that there's no wolf. And he's laughing just as big as he did the day before. And they're very upset, and they go back to their homes. You know this story? You probably know this story. So the next day, what happens? A wolf comes while the boy is watching his sheep. And he cries out, "Wolf! Wolf! There's a wolf here!" And the men of the community run, come to his aid. They kill the wolf. And everybody is safe. And the moral of the story is, you look after the people in your community, even if they annoy you. Right? You know that story? That story's a little different than maybe you've heard it. Usually, we hear that setup, the boy who cried wolf, and the third act goes a little differently. Right? And so we have this expectation. There's going to be this thing where they don't show up because they don't believe him. And the boy learns the lesson. Nobody believes a liar even when he's telling the truth. Right? That's a familiar story. Those kids that are all lined up here, they could tell us that story probably because it's one that that we've heard from a very early age. But when you change the ending, it changes a lot about the story. So what does that have to do with the rich man and Lazarus? Well, from what we can tell, when Jesus told this parable, rich man and Lazarus, he seems to have been doing a similar thing where he's taking a familiar story and turning it on its head. We have examples from Jewish literature found in the Palestinian Talmud and some other places of stories that go almost the same way as the rich man and Lazarus. So you're hopefully familiar with this parable. If not, you can open up to Luke 16. It says, "There was a rich man dressed in purple and fine linen and lived in luxury every day. At his gate was laid a beggar named Lazarus, covered with sores and longing to eat what fell from the rich man's table. Even the dogs came and licked his sores. Gross. The time came when the beggar died, and the angels carried him to Abraham's side. The rich man also died and was buried. He looked up and saw Abraham far away, with Lazarus by his side. So he called to him, "Father Abraham, have pity on me, and send Lazarus to dip the tip of his finger in the water and cool my tongue, because I am in agony in this fire." But Abraham replied, "Son, remember that in your lifetime you received your good things, while Lazarus received bad things. But now he is comforted here, and you are in agony. And besides all this, between us there is a great chasm that has been fixed, so that those who want to go from here to you cannot, nor can anyone cross over from here, from there to us." He answered, "Then I beg you, Father, send Lazarus to my father's house, for I have five brothers. Let him warn them, so they will not also come to this place of torment." Now, in the stories that we found, after that point, we like I said, we found a number of Jewish stories, even a couple Egyptian stories that have this framework. In those other stories, this request is granted. And it happens in a few different ways. Sometimes it's in a dream. Sometimes it's in a vision. One of the Egyptian ones, he's reincarnated and he grows up and he teaches a lesson. But in these stories, they see the value of having somebody come back from the dead and teach the severity of the consequences, and the people are changed in their hearts and change their ways. Jesus doesn't do that. After this request, it says, Abraham replied, "They have Moses and the prophets. Let them listen to them." "No, Father Abraham," he said, "but if someone from the dead goes to them, they will repent." And he said to them, "If they do not listen to Moses and the prophets, they will not be convinced, even if someone rises from the dead." So, just like the boy who cried wolf, and the wolf actually got killed, this story may not have been what they expected. And when you change the ending of a story, it makes a big difference. Just like the boy who cried wolf. So let's look at what they would have expected to hear and what Jesus gave them instead. When you change the ending, first of all, you change the focal point. You change what the story is focused on. Think about the boy who cried wolf example. With the classic ending, the focal point is on the boy. Right? The boy learns the lesson. He learns you have to tell the truth, because if you're telling lies, people aren't going to believe you. The boy is supposed to learn that lesson. With the changed ending, the lesson is for the townspeople. Right? It's a lesson about being there even for the people that annoy you. It's about looking out for those in your community, even when you have doubts. It changes that focal point. In the same way with rich man and Lazarus, with that change in the end, the previous stories would have been a focus on that rich person. It's a lesson about the proper way to live your life. It's about making sure that you are looking out for your loved ones, make sure they learn not to make the same mistakes. But with the way Jesus tells it, the focal point is changed. We no longer have that same emphasis on the rich man. Instead, where it ends is the importance of the response of those who are still alive. It ends with, they have Moses and the prophets. They need to respond to those lessons and not be waiting for this message from the beyond. So it changes where we stand as we hear the parable. So if you change the end, it changes the focal point. If you change the ending, it also changes the message. It changes the moral of the story. Just like I said with the boy who cried wolf, instead of being the message of can't trust a liar even when he tells the truth, it turns into look out for your neighbors. The message of the rich man and Lazarus becomes very different. If the rich man is allowed to get his message sent, if Abraham here does allow Lazarus to go bring this message, then the point of the story becomes that you still have a chance, right? It becomes, you may have missed your opportunity, but you need to be looking out for others. That even when your chance is lost, your chance is missed, you can never stop looking out for others. And there's always this chance. But Jesus shuts down that story. He gives another message. When you change the end, it turns the message into you need to make the most of your time before the end. Remember, if we shifted the focal point to the people who are still alive, it becomes listen to the teachings. It becomes don't ignore Moses and the prophets. So the focal point has changed. The message has changed. And when you change the ending, the stakes have become changed. This kind of goes along with the part about the message. But think about what that original story says. Think about what it says if Lazarus is allowed to go back and bring a message. It says that it tells this story about the stakes, about loving those who are still left. It talks about these raised stakes where even from beyond you can reach out with your love or with at least your warning and save those who are in danger of being in the same place as you, which is not a bad message. Just like the two different tellings of the boy who cried wolf, one is not better than the other. It's just a different story, different stakes. Now, with that one, the stakes are raised where it says, if you don't go to help, you might be putting somebody's life on the line. That was a similar message to what may have been the original telling of, or the original tellings of this type of story. It says you need to make sure that you are trying to protect and save those you love. With Jesus' adjustment, the stakes are changed. The stakes say that the time we have here is what we have. He says, if they do not listen to Moses and the prophets, they will not be convinced even if someone rises from the dead. He said, you're not going to be able to change it. He says, there's not going to be overtime. There's not going to be that chance to change something afterward. If you're going to, if you really are concerned about helping somebody change, if you really are concerned and out of love and concern wanting to help somebody to respond and become righteous, this is the time that we have. The stakes are raised in that way. But the good news on that is not only are the stakes raised, but it talks about the possibilities. It says that while we are limited to the time we have, it also says we have everything we need. That's encouraging. It says we have Moses and the prophets. We have even more than that. We have the parables and the teachings and the letters. And we have centuries of faithful Christians who've come before us, who've sorted through these things. And we have all of these things that we can use. And someday it is going to be too late. We're not going to have the opportunity that maybe those Egyptian stories and those Jewish stories says we may not have that opportunity to go back and send a messenger or appear in a dream and or change things in that way. But even though those stakes have been raised and we are limited in our time, we have everything we need. Now, Luke doesn't actually tell us what the sins of the rich man were. We don't know much about either of these two other than one was rich and one was poor. There have been a lot of ideas that have been put out about what exactly is going on between these two. Why is Lazarus given a name when nobody else in any of the other parables are? Is this Lazarus from that was raised from the dead in John? There are a lot of ideas out there, but I don't think that's what it's about. I don't think this is about any wickedness on the rich man's part or faithfulness on Lazarus' part. A lot of those Jewish stories do include those. They talk about the wicked rich man and the poor Torah scholar. Luke doesn't do that. It's not telling a morality tale here. It's telling us that our time is set. It's telling us that there will be a time that we won't be able to have a chance to reach anybody. And that sounds like bad news. But remember, the focal point of the story with this change is not on the person that has passed. It's on the people that are left. So, there will be a time that we are out of time. That's the bad news. The good news is we're not there yet. Yeah, we're still good. We still have a chance. And we have what we need. We have the people around us that we love, that we need to be looking after, that we need to be looking out for, that we need to care about where they're going to be. One thing we see from here is it says you don't go from one to the other. It says there is a gap. There is a chasm that can't be crossed, and it says there's even one from between the land of the living and either of those places. It says there's going to be a time where it will be too late, but we're not there. A lot of people commented when coming into class or service this morning that it's tough to get around town this weekend, right? We have a lot of people out and about in our community. We have a lot of people that we may not see them all the time. You know, everybody has their own lives, going about their own business. Something happens, we say, hey, peaches. And everybody shows up. And we get this vision of really all the people that are living around us, all the souls that God wants to reach in our community. And we need to take all of these things that we have been blessed with, all of the teachings and the stories and all of the experiences and the gifts of the Spirit and these things that God has given us, that we have a limited time to make use of these. Go and tell. If it's important enough after you're dead to wish you had told somebody, then it's important enough today to go tell somebody. And so that's our task. To not wait until it's too late. To go and tell. Well, how are we doing? I hope that we can go from here today and we can find a way to take this gift that we have, that Jesus talks about in this parable. It says that there's not going to be overtime, but you have time right now. If there's anybody that is on your heart that you are praying for and hoping to reach and want to share, and we can all be praying, it's a good time to share that. It doesn't have to just be tragedy that we share. We share the important things. We share those things during our family time, right? We want to hear about those that you care about. If you need to respond this morning, if you say, I only have so much time and I'm not wasting anymore, and you need to respond in baptism, there's no better decision, whether it's in a baptistry or a hot tub at Bill's house or a lake or wherever. What a wonderful thing to be added to the kingdom in that way. If there's anything you need this morning, please let us know as we stand and sing.
There's a great day coming, a great day coming.